Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to three-piece rock band from Glasgow, Scotland, Anchor Lane. 2023 saw the release of the second Anchor Lane album, Call This a Reality. Garnering an abundant number of glowing reviews, the album immediately entered the top 10 official UK rock and metal albums chart, scoring the band back-to-back top 10 placements following their debut album, Casino. Notably, in the official UK albums chart, Call This a Reality was number 3 in the record store chart, number 9 in the Scottish chart, and number 21 in the independent chart. Anchor Lane have built a reputation as a thrilling and dynamic live act through several successful UK tours and appearances at numerous prominent music festivals. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Connor, Lawrence and Graham from Anchor Lane. Guys, how are you doing? Where do we find you in the world and what's happening in your life?
Hello. Yeah, we're all good. We're in Glasgow, Scotland in our studio right now.
Why the name Anchor Lane?
Well, that's going back a wee while. So when the band first started, we were rehearsing in a studio called Lo-Fi Studios, which is just outside of the city centre, George Square, in Glasgow. And just off of George Square, there's a wee lane called Anchor Lane. And so that's where we decided to name it. That's the lane that the studio was on. So it just became a sort of like, oh, well, that's where we rehearsed. That's where we're from. It was based in Glasgow kind of thing. So it was just, you know, sort of staying true to your roots and keeping yourself grounded, I suppose, aye?
Now, we're going to do a rewind and then focus on the new stuff. So let's start from the very, very beginning. How did you guys meet? How did each of you realize you wanted to be in the musical industry? And let's start at the very beginning of your guys joining as a band.
The band was started by me. It's Connor speaking, just for anyone needing to know. The band was started by myself in college. And it was just sort of like, you know, bringing people in who were good players, who were interested in playing a similar kind of music. And as things go with bands, when they're in their early stages, people come in, people come out. And now we find ourselves where we are now, where I met Lawrence at the same college that I was in. He was in the year above me, and Lawrence was sort of known as the kind of like mythical, oh, like Lawrence O'Brien, he's this amazing guitar player. And we were lucky enough to bring him into the band in 2018.
Also, you're being very nice. It's unlike you. Daddy's coffee this morning.
Yeah. I've got to try and promote the band. Like, you know what I mean? I've got to try and promote things here.
Yes.
Poetic license. Yeah. And then, so we came through the lockdown, released an album just before the lockdown in 2020, and then came out the other end of the lockdown. Our drummer at the time left, and we were looking for a new drummer, and it was a pretty quick decision to ask Graham, who's with us now, to ask him to come in. He's a great drummer, and he was someone that we got along with really well as people, and that's a really important thing as well when you're going to be spending a lot of time together. It's, you know, if you can get someone in who's easy to get along with and are a great player, it's a very, very rare thing. So we were very fortunate to be able to do that.
Your creative process from zero to creating a 3 to 4 or 5 minute song, music, instrumentation, lyrics, what is that creative process for you guys?
So the process with the new album, Call This a Reality, which is coming out on January the 27th, the process was a wee bit different for this one as to other ones. This is Lawrence speaking now, the guitarist. They mainly started as my ideas with the guitar and the vocals, and then I'd send them in. And if everyone was like, yes, this resonates with me, I want to work on this, we'd work on it. And then we just bounce it off each other until we were all happy with it. And sometimes this was like quite a short process where the song only had a few weeks until we were going in the studio, or sometimes it was quite a long process of even as much as like 9 months, a year, where the song evolved quite a lot. And, you know, by the time that they were done, there was barely, you know, there was only a few parts that were recognizable from the original source, from the original idea that was sent in. And it's really nice because we all have a lot of music in common that we like. We talk together a lot, so we know what resonates lyrically as well. And so it's just, it was a nice environment, to be honest, because when I was writing these ideas, I knew that it was going to be Connor singing them, it was going to be Graham playing the drums, and we're all going to have a great time just putting it together. So, that was really inspiring and encouraging when we were writing these songs.
So you mentioned some of the songs took a little bit longer, like a few months to get to the finished product. When those specific songs were taking that amount of time, was it ever a frustration, or was it like, okay, we're just going to keep going until we get what we've got?
Kind of a bit of both at times, wasn't it? It depended on the song. I mean, it was mostly a kind of let's just keep going until we've got this, because there's definitely something there. I think we were quite good at kind of getting rid of the stuff that we didn't like pretty early on. There was maybe a few that kind of maybe went on longer than they should have, but we were pretty good at cutting off the dead weight. But there was a few where you knew there was one song on the album called Sycophant Disorder, and we just knew it was going to be something big, but we couldn't quite get it. We just couldn't quite get there. And we would come up with good ideas, that maybe other bands would be happy with, but we knew there was something else there. This has to be complete. This isn't quite there. And there also came a point in time where January, our bass player, who was helping us write some of the album, had left the band. And that actually kind of freed us up with some ideas, because the three of us actually have a lot of common ideas and common interests. And from there, we ended up getting these pieces of the songs that were maybe kind of missing before. The three of us hit a stride and managed to find the kind of the right creativity and the right moment for these songs to actually shine. And that's, I think, when we kicked on. So some of them took a while, and it just took a little breakthrough or something happening within the band, or someone had a little idea, and that then broke through the door of finally getting the song together.
Your lyrics that you guys write for the songs, what inspires them? Is it a personal experiences, what's happening in the world, combination of both?
So with the lyrics for this, we wanted to write something that represented us and something that was quite honest, and explores quite a lot of different things, with happiness, sadness, the blues of everyday life, although not blues in a 12-bar sense, blues in a, the sad stuff. And the thing is that it was through the conversations with each other that we managed to find something that we would all be represented by. Like, if I went away and wrote a song, but it was about hell and sounded like Slayer, it wouldn't really represent the other guys in the band. Or if Connor wrote a song and it sounded like all his U2 influences, me and Graham would probably turn our noses up at it. So, what I'm saying is, lyrically, it was a lot about the conversations that we had together, that when I was personally going to, start the songs, I knew what would react well with everyone, and that really helped.
Yeah, I think the thing for us is that we're like each other's agony aunts. So we just like come in on a Tuesday, and it's like, right, this is what's happening, and I'm annoyed about this, and blah blah, and he's doing that, blah. And as much as that's a kind of like therapy at the time, it obviously creates a sort of a brotherhood between the three of us, but also a sort of like, here's common ground where we all sit, here's things that we're all struggling with, and we're all fighting, and not even just us, everyone's struggling with. Like, life right now isn't easy. Like, it's hard for a lot of people, and a lot of people are really hurting right now, especially in the UK. And we wanted to represent that in this album. We wanted to show, this is how things are, this is how we're experiencing, the world right now, up in Glasgow in Scotland and in the UK.
Previously, we had, and I'm very grateful. I don't know if you guys know this, but in 2022, vinyls had the biggest sales they've had in the UK specifically, bigger since 1990. There were 5.5 million copies sold. So I'm speaking of a physical being cassettes, CDs, vinyls, all like I'm saying, all of those are making a comeback. Was I love me a CD. I love opening the booklet, seeing the thank yous, the lyrics, the art, all those type of things. And now a lot of these days, a lot of people are obviously consuming music on the digital platforms. What is your perception of the digital platforms and the way people are currently consuming music?
It's a good question. Yeah, it's hard, because you can get some artists, and I understand them, will come at it from a bit of a combative point of view, and this is bad for the industry, and I get that. But we all consume music digitally as well, so it would be a bit hypocritical to sit here and say that it's bad for the industry. It also gets your music. It's very easy to get your music out there now with streaming. That is a positive of it. You can just about, well, anyone really can put music online, in an instant. It obviously has a lot of downfalls. We're like yourself. We like having a physical product that we can look through, and it's why we've taken a lot of time with the new album and making a really nice product that people can sit with and read through the lyrics and look at the artwork and see the kind of journey that we've been on. So we do prefer the digital, the physical side ourselves. It's a balance. It's strange as an artist. You've just kind of got to accept it and roll with it. Industries change. Every industry changes. If you get a call center job 6 months in, you're doing twice the work you did when you started. You're always asked to do more than you thought. And it's the same in this industry. You're going to have to do things that you didn't necessarily think you would have to do. And pushing your stuff digitally and kind of surrendering a little bit to that online entity is kind of part of the sacrifice we need to make as a band. It's harsh because it's really harsh financially on musicians, very harsh, and hopefully that'll start to improve. We don't know, but at the end of the day, you've just kind of got to look at what it can do for you, and move on from there, because the industry's it's not going to change just because you don't like it, basically.
I mean, it's the whole kind of like, you move with the times or you get left behind. Ideally, would we like that everyone bought albums and bought vinyls and bought, everything physical? Yeah, it makes us more money. But that's not reality right now, and reality is convenience. So it's about how do you get your music out to people and make it a convenient way for them to consume it. So whether that be on Spotify or whether it be, when we were on tour, we had a QR code that people could pre-order our album from the merch desk kind of thing. And then you've got different options for people. There's a digital download for the album. You can pre-save it on Spotify. You can buy a CD. You can buy a vinyl. There's a lot of options there for people. And I think that's what you need to do, is you need to give people options so that they know that you've got their interests at heart.
Totally agree. Like I said, I'm very grateful, and you mentioned the physical, but the fact that physicals, even cassettes, I was surprised. I mean, I didn't really enjoy cassettes because I hated when they used to wind up. I'm not sure if you guys ever had cassettes, but they used to like unravel. So, and cassettes are making comebacks, CDs. So I'm very grateful for that. So at least you guys can also make money, because for me, buying the CD, it's an energy exchange to say, thank you so much, guys. You put in so much work in creating the music, creating the songs, the lyrics, the artwork, and all of that. And I hear what you're saying around convenience, but I also feel, and what would like your perception on it, don't you potentially feel that the convenience allows people to sort of wash music aside compared to before? It was a journey. Ah, I like that song. I need to find which album it's on. I need to go to the store. I will go get it delivered, save the money for it, open it, and experience it. Where it's now, okay, I don't really like that song. Let's fast forward. It's become so quick and, as you mentioned, convenient. But don't you feel that maybe cheapens the experience for the end user?
I think so, yeah. I think you're right. There's a kind of perception out there from a lot of people that anything online or anything that comes out for public consumption should be free. I'm not paying for a DVD, I'm not paying for this. I can get it online for free. It has totally devalued art to that extent. And I don't think people actually, take seriously enough how much of a role art plays in not only the creative industry, but so many other industries. Music or film or TV gets you through the day in some instances. So it definitely has devalued it, as you say. It was a special thing where you got home and you opened it up, and we remember doing that as well. You get the same in the kind of video game industry now. It's all digital, and you miss opening that physical game and maybe getting the map, and then you get to look at the map, and you had all that. But you're kind of stuck in this sphere where people don't really like to commit. They don't like to pay for something. There's a lot of free trials. Oh, do this for a month and see if you like it. Or there's clothes companies now where you can order the clothes. If they don't fit, you send them back and you don't pay a penny. It's the convenience has overtaken quality in a lot of ways. So yeah, it definitely can risk, you get that risk of music being brushed aside. But I think at the end of the day, the people that are serious enough about it will still enjoy that. Although it's not a physical commitment in a lot of ways, they'll still spend a lot of time and energy listening to your stuff and picking it apart, and then ultimately hopefully coming to your show as well.
The thing I would say about it as well, sorry, just to add on to that as well, is I think that with us being a rock band and being in the sort of rock scene, fans of rock music are more likely to buy, I would say, are more likely to buy your music and listen to a full album than, say, maybe people who listen to R&B or listen to music that's maybe in the charts or things like that, because there's almost like a kind of a sort of like Moorish value to rock music, especially for someone who really is passionate about it. They want everything they can get from it. If they find a band they really, really like, you find so many people that are just mad about this band, that band, that band, and they've listened to their entire discography. So I think, yeah, the convenience has devalued music in a way, but I think that for us being a rock band and being in this sort of like, almost like a sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like a kind of dirty corner of the music,
like a niche,
sometimes that can work in your favor, and the fact that the people who are there are really, really passionate about it, and that's something that we have found.
It's interesting you say that, because rock used to be the mainstream on the charts, and these days, you know, it's amazing how over the years genres take over the charts. I mean, like the 80s and 90s, you know, it was rock, pop and stuff, and now it seems very much, as you mentioned, specifically in the billboards in the UK, in the USA, not necessarily the UK and Europe, but specifically the billboard and the USA charts, is mainly now hip hop and rap. So I find it interesting how the genres like sort of change. Like a rock artist or a pop artist who used to have like five number ones after each other in the USA can't even get into the top 100 now anymore. I find it totally weird. Whereas in Europe and the rest of UK and so forth, if you're a mainstay artist and you've continued to stay in the top 10, you'll always be in the top 10. I've been following the music charts, and I've got these books, these encyclopedia books of the music charts, I mean, since I was like 4 years old, literally. So yeah, it's interesting how genres come and go. And the reason I bring it up is you mentioned rock being a dirty corner or niche, whereas a couple of decades ago, it was the mainstay on the charts.
Yeah.
I think a big thing to do with that now is attention span. Not to disrespect a lot of these artists that are in the charts. I mean, if you're there, you deserve it. You know, you've worked hard enough. A lot of that is maybe, especially with R&B hip hop, there's a loop, you know, a 3 minute loop of a drum beat or some chords in the background. It's very easy to listen to, and you can listen to it for a minute and you've got the gist of the song. Whereas when it comes to some other genres, like the one we're involved in, the songs tend to be more interesting. They move around a lot more. They don't stay in the same place. And I think the attention span needs to be there from the listener to appreciate the work that's been done and the song that's been created. Because speaking personally with our songs, none of them stay in the same place for long enough for you to actually settle. So, you know, you hear a minute and you've only got literally a minute of the song. There's two other minutes out there that you've not heard that you can't grasp from hearing what you've heard. So I think the attention span is a big thing, which all comes into what we've talked about with things being digital. And that's just over decades led up to this point now where the general attention span is very, very short.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, and we all feel it. I'm sure we all feel it.
Yeah. I was like, boom, boom, done. It's interesting because I do my posts for Celebs Finds on TikTok, but I can be totally honest with you. I cannot stand watching anything on TikTok. I find it so, I'm like, what is this? Like, I don't know what I'm watching. It's like so weird. Like, what comes up? Anyway. Speaking of that, your guys' perception on social media.
We've got enough time on the interview here. Social media is a funny one. It's definitely something that we have a frustration with. I think everyone has a frustration with it, though. It's on the surface a great thing. Being able to connect to people, like even what we're doing right now, you're in South Africa and we're, you know, in Glasgow in Scotland, and being able to have a conversation, like that's incredible. That's amazing. But I think that people feel like they need to only post about their highlights and that, you know, oh, look how great my life is and look how great things are. When that's not reality. That's not what any of us experience on a day-to-day life. Like, you know, throughout the day, you have good things that happen and you have things that are not so good. And that doesn't get shown. And I think that's why we've got a bit of an epidemic of mental health issues, because people feel that they need to live up to this lifestyle that doesn't exist. You know, they're maybe following influencers on Instagram or on TikTok or whatever, who show how amazing their life is, and oh, they're driving this great car and they're living in this great house and blah blah blah. And it's just not reality and it's not true. And I think that really is affecting people. And I think the overstimulation and the over kind of like feeling like you're constantly being judged and assessed by your peers is something that that a lot of people struggle with, and it's something that we wrote about in one of our songs. The first song on the album called Stutter, which was released at the first single, is about that. It's about how, you know, when you're at high school and you feel that you're constantly judged and you're constantly trying to fit in and do things, and then you feel like you've maybe got out of it and you no longer feel like that being in your, you know, your mid-20s, and then all of a sudden you flick through Instagram for half an hour and you're back in high school and you feel like the wee spotty short kid again.
I completely agree. That, you know, the thing is that pre doing what I'm doing now, I was never on social media as personally. I did go into Facebook once many years ago for like a day, and all my friends who I knew who were living overseas, it was like, this is not the person I knew when they were living down the road from me. It's like, I didn't know you screamed when you saw a spider on the wall, and I don't really care. Now I look at this person on Facebook and now I see, oh, she saw a spider on the wall and she screamed. I'm like, okay. So then I stopped Facebook straight away. Then I was like, really, I'm not interested.
Terrible for oversharing, isn't it? There's a hell of a lot on there. Mm. You don't need to know. The one for me was when we turned, I don't know, turning 23 or 24, and all the people you were in school with start putting up baby photos and they just get immediately unfollowed. I'm not ready for this. I'm not in this stage of my life yet.
Yeah, no, I don't want to see the baby. It looks like a potato. Yeah, sorry.
They'll bring on more animal videos. If we
yeah,
could
I like
just
those.
Have a,
those are cute.
Yeah. Just a social media platform that did specifically and exclusively animal videos, I'd be up for that.
Yeah. Uplifting animal videos. Not.
Yeah.
I love this game. I'm going to play with each of you. Unfortunately, it's going to give one of you or a couple of you some time, because I'm going to go around the room. And I know if I ask you this question in 2 minutes, 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, I know the answer will be different from each of you each of those times. So it's in this moment of time, I'd like each of you, starting off with Connor, to give me your top five go-to songs by other artists.
Ooh! I hate this question because you're right, it does change. Right, so give me Novocaine by Green Day, Hades by Vekovi, Midnight Sun by North Atlas, Battery by Metallica, and Cowboys from Hell by Pantera.
Brilliant. Lawrence, you next.
Throes of Perdition by Pantera. Let me think. Master Puppets by Metallica. Shout by Shockwave. Not by Shockwave, by Black Tide. Superheroes by Racer X. And In God We Trust by Stryper.
Lovely. Graham, up next.
I'm going to go for 2112 by Rush. The whole 25 minutes, why not? I'm going to go Wind Up, Foo Fighters, When We Were Young, Architects. I'll go with, what will I do? I'll go with Space by Biffy Clyro, and I will do Stutter by Anchor Lane.
There we go. Nice. So have you guys, any of you been to South Africa before? And if not, your perceptions of the country?
Unfortunately not. No,
I've never been. My perception of the country, I'm a big rugby fan, so my perception of the country is how the rugby team is, which is big, brutal guys. I think that it's a country that I'd love to see. I don't really know what my perception is of the country, because I don't really know much about it.
My only perception, I don't know if you're aware, over here, Barrett, there was a TV show called Wild at Heart.
Oh my God, mind that show!
It was phenomenal. It was about an English vet who moved to South Africa to start up his own, I don't know what you would call it.
Wildlife sanctuary.
Yeah, his own wildlife sanctuary. Yeah. And he became the veterinarian for the area. And that, for me, was my whole, the surname Duplessis came from that. And yes. The next time I saw the surname Duplessis, I went, oh yeah, they must be South Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my perception, which to me is a dream, because I love everything to do with wildlife and animals. And
yeah.
I'd love to go to get an experience of being in the bush and how it must be to live that life. And you know, you've got tribes, it's such an ancient place. You've got so much ancient culture there that would just be very interesting for us modern folk to go and see.
Putting it out there that you guys will come and perform in the country, I'll be there cheering you on in right in the front. And then we'll go for coffee and maybe go for safari after that. How does that sound?
Amazing.
That sounds absolutely perfect.
Brilliant. So guys, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. The UK, USA, Australia are top three countries. South Africa is actually fourth. So as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Thank you very much for all the support and the interest. hope yous have enjoyed hearing us talk absolute shite. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, exactly that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Barrett.